Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Wiki Shuffle, the podcast that couldn't slow down. My name's Jack. I'm joined by Chris.
Hello.
And Phil.
Hello.
Once again, we will be pressing the random article button on Wikipedia and talking about whatever it throws up. And we have nothing else to talk about this week, so let's just get right down into it.
Amber Leaf.
Chris, this is your random article. This is
what are the.
I'm guessing it's the tobacco.
The old man smoking tobacco, yeah.
Amber Leaf, the old man smoking tobacco.
I thought you did use
I do, yeah.
Chris is known to partake in a little Amber Leaf. It does sound like a stripper name.
It does.
Amber Leaf will be my stripper alter ego, should I need one at any point.
Mine's
going to
be Dump Digger.
Amber Leaf is a brand of rolling tobacco. It is a product of the Gallagher Group division of Japan Tobacco. Ooh. It is available in various size packets, 10 grams, 12.5 grams, 25 grams and 50 grams. The 12.5 gram box includes rolling papers, and recently 6 lines of filter tips have been included in their 3-in-1 packs. The 25 gram and 50 gram pouches come with rolling papers only. In 2011, promotional Amber Leaf tobacco tins were sold with the tobacco in some stores in the UK.
This is exciting stuff. I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, I'm not sure how comfortable. I'm effectively just doing a fag advert here, by which I mean cigarette advert, because we do have some transatlantic listeners. Yeah, here we are. So this is a particularly popular brand of rolling tobacco.
I do use that on occasion.
I'm surprised to learn that it's Japanese in origin.
Yeah, I am as well.
So there we are.
I don't get the hints of the Japanese through
no
through my smoking. Bad smoking. I should not do.
I feel like the Japanese would know better than to smoke.
You would think so.
But evidently not.
They've done a lot of bad things in their time, Phil.
True.
Not just smoking.
Amber Leaf rolling tobacco is most popular in Japan, USA and the United Kingdom. The majority of the people who smoke Amber Leaf are 18 to 35 years of age.
Oh, I am in that demographic.
Yep,
you are. So it's not old man
yeah,
tobacco
at all.
Yeah,
it's not as old man of tobacco as you might think, Chris.
I mean, using tobacco is an old man thing, but yeah.
And then the next bit, and there is a citation needed reference here. It is a well-known fact that Amber Leaf is the most popular brand of tobacco for under 18-year-olds. No citation for that, and
it's because it's cheap. I'm not a bigger smoker as I used to be. I used to be a lot worse, but these days I only roll like. Oh God, I sound like a dump digger. I only smoke it every now and again, so I don't need as much tobacco. So.
It was only established in the year 1991. So many smokers who had been smoking most of their life were already used to another brand of tobacco, mainly Amber Leaf's main competitor, Golden Virginia and Cutter's Choice, although Amber Leaf's popularity has risen sharply since its launch.
I have to say, as the only smoker, really, I don't really care what tobacco I smoke. It's all the same.
I thought you smoked, Phil.
I occasionally partake, but I'm by no means an expert, and I certainly don't partake in rollies.
They're an acquired taste, I think, aren't they?
Yeah.
Also, they're more faff.
A lot more faff.
I quite like the faff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make it sound like it's a hobby.
Yeah. Right, and that's it.
That's it. That's all we've got to know.
I've got nothing really to say about that.
Charles Lynch, judge. Charles Lynch, 1736 to 1796, was a Virginia planter, politician, and American revolutionary who headed an irregular court in Virginia to punish loyalist supporters of the British during the American Revolutionary War. The terms lynching and lynch law are said by some to derive from his name, although this is disputed.
That's interesting. We just went from Amber Leaf and therefore Virginia, Golden Virginia, straight into a Virginia planter. It's not that interesting, but, you know, it's notable.
It's a link. In a way.
We'll take what we can get.
Yeah.
Charles Lynch was born in 1736 at an estate known as Chestnut Hill on the banks of the James River in Virginia. Lynch's father left his native island and emigrated to the English colony of Virginia in about 1725 as an indentured servant, called a redemptioner in the nomenclature of the day. Upon arrival in the New World, Lynch was sold to a wealthy planter living in Caroline City. Lynch remained with the planter for his fixed term of servitude, winning in the process not only his freedom, but the hand of his daughter, Sarah Clark, in marriage. Oh, so it's a slave comes good story, although I suspect it's going to go bad again.
Yeah.
With the financial assistance of the elder Clark, the Lynches themselves became planters of tobacco on a large scale, farming well over 7,000 acres of Virginia land. Lynch married a fellow Quaker, the former Anne Terrell, on January the 12th, 1755. The young couple set out to establish their new home on Virginia's western frontier on a more distant parcel of land granted to his father by King George II in newly established Bedford County. Following the end of the French and Indian War in 1763, the danger associated with life at the frontier greatly lessened and a flood of newcomers began to appear in Bedford County. Lynch's position as a landowner and leading citizen but was by this time well established. His farming of tobacco and raising of cattle had made him a wealthy man, the possessor of property and African slaves.
There we are.
Here's the turning point. Beginning in 1764, other property-owning white male citizens began to approach Lynch to ask him to become a candidate for the Virginia Assembly. Lynch initially refused these entreaties on the grounds that swearing the necessary oath of office was prohibited behaviour for an adherent of the Quaker religion.
So, yeah, he was sold to a wealthy planter.
So this was a black slave that was not a slave anymore?
No, it wasn't a slave. He was an indentured servant.
Oh, okay.
So kind of a step down from a slave or up.
I'd say a step up.
I think a step up.
And then
you're in trouble if you're a step down.
And then decided, I'm going to have some slaves now.
Pretty much, yeah. That seems to be what happened. So this chap, the way that indentured servitude worked is that you'd effectively pay for your travel to the New World by saying, I will be unpaid labour for you if you sponsor me to be on a ship over to the New World, is how I believe it worked. And then he worked his term. Lynch served in the Virginia House of Burgesses and the Convention from 1769 until 1768, when he became a military colonel.
Hang on. 1769 until 1768.
That wouldn't work, would it?
That wouldn't work. Yes, he's a time traveller, but I think that would have been in the first paragraph.
They'd have mentioned that sooner. Lynch served in the Virginia House of Burgesses and the Convention from 1769 until 1778, when he became a military colonel. After the Revolution, he served in the Virginia Senate from 1784 to 1789. Okay. In several incidents in 1780, Lynch and several other militia officers and justices of the peace rounded up suspects who were thought to be part of a loyalist uprising in southwestern Virginia. The suspects were given a summary trial at an informal court. Sentences handed down included whipping, property seizure, coerced pledges of allegiance, and conscription into the military. Lynch's extra-legal actions were retroactively legitimised by the Virginia General Assembly in 1782. Lynch's law, referring to the organised but unauthorised punishment of criminals, became a common phrase, as was used by Charles Lynch to describe his actions as early as 1782. The Oxford English Dictionary, however, notes that the origin of the expression has not been determined. Various variations of the term, such as Lynch law, Judge Lynch, and lynching, were standard entries in American and British English dictionaries by the 1850s. In 1811, a man named Captain William Lynch claimed that the phrase, by then famous, actually came from a 1780 compact signing by him and his neighbours in the Pittsylvania Court, Virginia, to uphold their own brand of law, independent of legal authority. So everybody wanted a piece of this. Personally, I'd like to have my name as distanced as possible away from any law that suggested that you could just eke out any revenge beatings that you might want
to. You've been shamaned. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Charles Lynch, the judge, is a total asswipe.
It certainly sounds like Charles Lynch, the judge, was an asswipe.
Okay, certified asswipe.
Yep.
We've put the Wiki Shuffle seal of asswipe on him.
Charles Lynch died on October 29th, 1796.
Actually, I felt really happy then, but I guess it was inevitable that he was going to die at some point, considering he was born in the 1770s.
If he was still alive now, that would be something to be worried about. So, man's ability to be unpleasant to his fellow man.
I did assume that this article would be a bit more interesting, considering it's the originator of the word lynching, but
it's fairly vague about what he actually did. Sentences handed down including whipping, property seizure, coerced pledges of allegiance, and conscription into the military. It's a bit non-specific for somebody who seems to have been so proud in what he was achieving and was obviously being frenzied into do it by the general political mood, which itself is pretty grim, isn't it?
Yep. Anyway, he's dead now. Let's move on.
Yeah, and there's no sign of any kind of lynching or crime or any kind of punishment being doled out without due legal process in America or anywhere else in the world, so that's good to know.
Happy endings all round.
Relentless is the debut album from former S Club 7 lead singer Joe O'Meara.
Now we're talking.
Oh, here we go.
Settle in. We're back on territory we know how to talk about.
I think we should maybe explain to our international listeners, of which we have many.
Particularly the Algerian contingent.
A lot of Algerians. We've had no downloads in France, but we've had a lot in Algeria.
Very strange.
Don't know why, but we'll take it.
Hello, Algeria.
So,
it's not Eurovision.
Hello, Algiers, the United Kingdom calling. So, Joe O'Meara, lead singer of S Club 7, is a pop group, an intersex pop group. They were big in
the... I don't think they described themselves as that.
Intersex. I'm not sure
intergender.
That...
Yeah. That's the word. So there were seven of them, hence the S Club 7. I don't know what the S stood for. They used to say it can stand for anything you want, but
well,
beginning
no, that's,
with,
that's...
with S.
You do need to add that caveat on there.
Yeah,
We're describing Joe O'Meara as the lead singer here. That's not how I recall.
She was the lead singer.
Joe is the front.
She was pretty much the only one that could sing.
I mean, Joe had the flow.
Yeah,
I'm not disputing that.
Nobody does.
So the controversy around Joe O'Meara. I mean, she was just the lead singer of a pop group. She was fine, and then she went on Celebrity Big Brother.
Oh.
And she was part of a gang or a troupe of women.
I would call them a coven.
Yeah, there were three of them. Generally, covens are three. Yeah. She was a part of a coven that relentlessly, as the name of the album suggests, bullied and harassed Shilpa Shetty, the Bollywood actress. And they did so fairly racistly. And it was a big, big deal over here in the UK.
It was huge.
It was a massive story.
Well, it was huge.
And in India.
Because they were burning effigies. And
they were, yeah. Yeah, so the troupe was Joe from S Club 7.
Coven.
Jade Goody, who was a former Big Brother contestant and then went on to appear in Celebrity Big Brother because of the celebrity that she had gained from being in Big Brother. And the other one was...
Danielle Lloyd,
who was a glamour model.
Married to Teddy Sheringham at some point.
Was it? She's been through a lot of footballers,
she's
I seem to
a
remember.
Lot of
yeah. So there's a bit of background. So I'm not sure whether was this after the racism incident, 2005,
something like that.
Well, let's read on and see if it mentions.
Well, I don't think Joe from S Club. I don't think anybody remembers the flow anymore. I think it's all about the racism.
It is, and I always felt like it was a bit of a storm in a teacup.
It wasn't very nice to watch. It was pretty hard to watch, but at the same time, the media did go a bit super mad. I don't think they needed to burn things. I can understand not letting Jade Goody be on Iceland adverts anymore. That's fine. But the hate was to the same extent. So
I think there had definitely been instances of bullying in Big Brother before that were much worse.
Oh yeah.
But the fact that this was in a celebrity show where you kind of expect people to behave a little bit better, and it was bullying.
It was bullying.
And the racism thing was.
It's
a difficult argument because it was very overt. They said things like, you know, Shilpa Poppadom instead of Shilpa Shetty. You know, just really, really tedious, basic racism for idiots.
Yeah.
There's a certain school of thought where you could say it's just ignorance. They didn't realise what they were doing because basically the three of them were incredibly, incredibly thick.
Yeah.
But can you excuse... I mean, it's the same argument as when people say, oh, it's just grandma. She lived in a different time.
I think what they...
They're still racist.
They couldn't have any contract anymore and they got sacked by the people that would have paid the money. The same way, like Jeremy Clarkson, I'm glad he sacked because that's the point. Don't do things like that. But the public hate and the sort of walking through the streets and the papers printing all sorts about you, I think maybe that's a step too far and maybe playing into the same camp as the person doing it in the first place.
I did see an interview with Jo shortly after this where she was saying she was suicidal and she wasn't leaving the house.
The public's way of going with that is increase it.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if that's just the British public, but that's what we do.
We do love a good scapegoat, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like we're doing Joe a disservice, though, because we haven't mentioned Relentless once.
Yeah. Sorry, Joe, this is your moment to shine. Detracting from this is a positive article about your achievements.
I'm sure it's a great album.
I'm sure it's fantastic. It was released 2.5 years after the pop outfit split in May 2003. Produced by Brian Rawling, also responsible for some of Cher and Enrique Iglesias' hits, was co-written by O'Meara, and the album is a mix of contemporary pop, disco and soulful ballads. The album was released in late 2005, entering at 49 on the UK Albums Chart. Not a hit.
She might have been the lead singer of S-Club, but she was the weak link as well. Because
that's quite hard.
I don't mean rough as in I mean rough as in if you're in a pub and you spill a pint on her.
She'd kick your ass. Yeah.
Your head.
But then. Yeah,
she'd handle herself.
But that's how it worked. That was the dynamic, and a lot of like boy and girl groups do this, where you have four very attractive ones, and then you have an ugly one who can sing. It may be hard. She wasn't ugly. She was just not as attractive as Hannah Rachel Latina.
That's what I mean by rough. I don't mean rough as in necessarily looking. Just rough as in behind those eyes, she would have no problem glassing them.
Okay. Yeah. Or like throwing a Molotov cocktail through a kebab shop window, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. If that happens, it's not mentioned in this article anywhere. I'm assuming you're referencing some personal experience you have with Joe. Now, I read somewhere, and I don't know that this is true, or it's certainly not referenced in this particular article, that after the whole Celebrity Big Brother debacle, Joe retreated off to the countryside and now lives in a farm where she breeds big dogs, like proper like Newfoundland-sized dogs.
Really? Maybe a lot of pop acts from that era seem to live on farms now.
Saying it out loud makes me think that I've made it up. Though.
Yeah,
but I can.
It doesn't sound that true.
Joe walking through a town centre past Spa or whatever with two massive dogs on each arm.
Yeah,
in a tracksuit. I can
just
see it.
Sort of pushing them towards anyone of a different colour to her to try and get them to have a bite. No, is that libel? Joe, I'm sure you're not racist. You were misguided.
No, I don't know if this is, but I think what she said, I don't think you can really say that's libel. That's libelous because it's filmed. It's there. It's in your face.
Yeah, true.
I think we're just voicing an opinion about Joe. That's the moment.
I've just had a look, and it was in 2007, so 2 years after this album. The Celebrity Big Brother incident.
Oh.
And since then, S Club have made something of a comeback as well.
They were on Children in Need the other year.
They were. Comic Relief.
It was one of them. I can't remember which one.
Yeah, they weren't great.
In November 2014, S-Club 7 announced plans for an arena reunion tour, promptly entitled Bring It All Back 2015.
See what they did there.
To launch in May 2015, so watch this space.
May 2015? What now?
Right now.
Imminently.
Imminent. Any minute now, they're going to explode in an arena near you.
Oh my God.
There's no mention of the big dog rearing, so I may have just made that up. Is that libelous?
Probably. Who cares? What I liked about S Club 7 is that they brought back that thing that the Beatles and the Monkees used to do, and they had their own TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
Where they would do some pretty poor acting.
Mm-hmm.
There was Miami 7 and LA 7, where they'd just they'd go to Miami for a series and just chill out.
Yeah, I think it was very much in the same time as Friends, and they thought they could maybe cash in on both that and the singing.
Yeah, and they didn't.
Well, they did in the 90s. They were huge in the 90s.
They were big. Didn't they make no money, though? Wasn't that the thing?
Kept from them. They made about... I think they came out with about 100 grand each, all told.
Well, that's not no money.
For a four-year career in the music business,
yeah,
you know, that's a...
And three or four series.
It's an average
on TV. Yeah.
Office job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who don't you hear from anymore? I think Rachel, she seems quite fine, I think. I think she's probably the one that had the most success. And
sure,
now probably
she did,
just
yeah. Tina's tried to do a singles career. It hasn't really taken off.
Yeah.
But Paul, she's devastatingly attractive these days. So
Paul
good
did
on you,
metal.
Tina.
He did a metal
Paul did
band.
To metal. John, is John out yet? Are we allowed to say this?
No
as well?
Comment. Oh. I don't know.
I don't know. He might be. If not, I hope you're happy, John. Bradley's just cool still.
No, because Bradley, Joe and Paul did a lot of uni tours a couple of years
they
ago.
They did, as S Club 3.
As S Club 3, which is awful.
So Relentless, the album, didn't do that well. That's a shame.
It probably wasn't very good. Joe on her own.
Citation needed again. It might be the best album of all time, it just didn't get publicity.
That's possible. Going from the track titles, Relentless.
Racism.
What hurts the most?
Racism does.
Wish I Was Over You. To Ease Your Pain.
By Not Being Racist.
You Didn't Know. Baby, I'm a Fool.
From Being Racist.
Never Meant to Break Your Heart.
By Being Racist.
Rainbow's End.
By Racism Happening. They're the unofficial song titles.
They're in brackets, yeah.
Yeah.
Hole in One, also known as Parfection, the golf movie. Oh, that's bad. Is a 2010 comedy film starring Steve Talley. It is about a cool undergraduate boy who gets tricked by some surgeons and they operate on him, giving him a set of breasts.
Oh, fuck. Right. For starters, you can't tell me he's cool. I'll be the judge of that.
Yep, that's true.
Secondly, he gets tricked by some surgeons.
Yeah, they're tricksy. They gave him a set of breasts. Now he has to earn money through golf for the reverse surgery.
What?
What was the character's name?
It doesn't say.
Just man.
Eric Keller. Eric Keller. Steve Talley as Eric Keller.
Summer, Eric Keller. Sounds awful.
Oh, that's just the worst premise for a film I can possibly imagine.
Have you been tricked by surgeons and given a set of breasts? Do you deserve compensation for these things that have happened to you? Call 0800 hole in one.
Or just go and do a golf tournament, because I imagine it's worked that well for him.
It's
the
logical,
inevitable
thing to do to make money, isn't it?
Yeah.
The film was released by Universal Studios via Universal Pictures in the United Kingdom on September 12, 2010, with a wide release in an additional 65 territories and countries. It is awaiting a US domestic release.
Really? Because it's like the most... I mean, the actual poster says American Pie Plays Golf.
Yeah.
So I would have assumed it would be...
That's the
is it an American Pie film, or is it...
No, they're just trying to...
It's trying to... cash
yeah,
in.
Lazy.
Mm.
There were loads of films that tried to cash in on the American Pie thing around that time, though.
Yeah, like American Pie 2 and American Pie 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. Universal tagged the movie as American Pie Plays Golf, and so many people have mistaken it for being the eighth American Pie film, because Steve Talley, who appeared in American Pie Presents The Naked Mile and American Pie Presents Beta House, stars in it. Further evidence shows that Steve Talley is called Eric Keller in Hole in One and is called Dwight Stifler in the American Pie film series, which shows the distinct differences between the films. Box office figures report $600,000 taken in London, England, with no other figures reported. So it was only released here, apparently, but it does.
It
is an American, but it is an American film, and that's as much as we get. The cover, my God, the cover is awful.
I haven't seen the cover, so I'm going to try and describe it. Right.
Okay.
So there's going to be the main character will be right at front centre.
Yep.
Maybe a little bit of an angle, a sort of diagonal angle, and looking straight at you.
Jaunty head off to one side, but looking straight at you,
Has he got a golf club in his hand?
He has.
Right, okay. And is the sky really blue?
No, there's
no. There's a white background.
Similar to the American Pie thing. Mm-hmm. And is the logo, what's this film called again?
Hole in One.
Hole in One. That might be, is that a jaunty angle?
It is.
Okay, good. Yeah.
And hang on, there's something that the one has a golf ball for the O.
Yeah, good.
And there's something on the golf ball. Can you guess what that is?
A nipple.
That would be weird. It's a kiss mark.
Of course it is.
No, I don't understand this because the film is about him getting rest and then playing golf. But the cover is so sexual. You were dead right about it being him front and centre with his golf club.
Yeah. Has he got boobs in it?
He hasn't.
Oh, okay.
But there's actually a group of characters behind him.
Are they all scandal cast?
Not really.
Not characters, but coquettish girls.
Yes.
There's a group of coquettish girls.
The only thing this needs, and this is a bit of a stretch if it's got it, would be like maybe a bra or some underwear hanging off the logo.
Well, it hasn't quite got that.
Is at the bottom of the image.
Yeah, the main focus of the poster isn't the main character with his golf club. He is actually obscured somewhat by a giant, I don't know, bottom half of a woman, basically, who is facing him. And
does he look shocked?
She's got his her legs open.
Yeah.
She's got a few golf balls and tees on her stomach.
Oh.
And yeah, it very much looks like he has just played a perfect shot right into her vagina.
Which is a crime.
Well, no, it very much looks as though they wanted it to look like that. Yeah. In reality, it is so badly photoshopped that there is no way that these two objects have ever been in the same hemisphere as each other.
It looks like a giant vagina is about to devour six people. That's what it looks like.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's sort of what I was expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a sensational poster. And as far as I'm concerned in the synopsis, there's nothing to do with women or, you know, sex or anything. It's just clearly just to draw people into this shit film.
Well, the main plot device is the bit that intrigues me is the surgeons that play tricks on him.
He's been wronged by surgeons and he's got no recourse except golf.
It's a stretch, isn't it? This can get made, but so many other things can't get funding.
It makes me want to never watch another film again.
Turn your back on them.
It looks so terrible.
I understood this sort of film when we were young, because it would be a way to get a bit of titillation when, you know, we didn't really have the internet, or, you know, not to the point where you could play videos anyway. So it was like seeing something a bit naughty. Sort of like FHM, that sort of lad's mag. You'd buy it because you'd get to see some boobs, but there was nowhere else to see boobs. These days, those magazines and these type of films, they're not needed.
No, they're not needed.
If you want to see tits, it's piss easy to see tits. Tits are everywhere.
In all different forms.
All different forms. You don't have to sit through a tedious story about golf and surgeons tricking you to get boobs.
Well, it seems like our initial scepticism about the quality of this film is backed up by the 3 out of 10 rating that it currently has on the IMDb.
Oh, that's bad.
That is bad. You have to be a bad film to get that low. It's strange. Wikipedia routinely always links for every film and actor will link through to IMDb, but very rarely does for Rotten Tomatoes, which is.
I did actually watch what was it called?
Play Again, Sam,
the Woody Allen film.
Oh, yes.
So I think the challenge is on one of you to watch Hole in One for the benefit of the podcast. Come on.
I'll do it. I've watched Turtles 4 times.
All right.
I would rather watch Hole in One than anything of Woody Allen's. So, I think the real challenge there might be to find a copy of Hole in One. And the idea
isn't stained.
Yeah. that.
I think the dump diggers took all the. I keep bringing them up. They're taking all the copies.
Dump diggers was last week. Let's leave it in the past.
I'll watch it.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be my task for this week.
Okay, good. Next week, Phil.
I'll give you a full review of Hole in One. Perfection.
Great. Perfection.
Perfect. Oh, come on. Yeah, perfection.
Okay, so tune in next week for Chris's review of Hole in One. Yeah. Perfection. Mm-hmm. Until then, you can keep up with the show on wikishuffle.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter at wikishufflepod, where we'll be posting facts found through the random article on Wikipedia each day at 4:45. That's
UK
GMT.
Time.
Facebook.com/wikishuffle. You can email us at podcast@wikishuffle.co.uk if you want to get in touch or if you've found anything particularly interesting on the random article button. And finally, you can get us individually on Twitter. I'm Duke, J-double-O-K. Chris is Chris Wallace 123, and Phil is P.E. Sharman. Until next week, see you later.
Bye.
Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.